Let's begin. Apologies for the delay. I somehow thought that would be faster or there would be fewer people attending. But well, I guess that's success. So we are going to use Symmetry. I want you to go to the webpage, https://symmetry.pi.local. The URL is written down there. And once you go there, you should see a login screen approximately like that. I think most of you have done that already. And I'm going to log in with my regular Parameter credentials. And then I see this. This is a file browser of the files that I have on Symmetry. You probably have fewer files there. And before you can use Julia, you need to set up your account. That's something you're going to do only once. So I'm going to show you how to do that. Please follow on. There's a button. Can you actually see that? Here, everything on the right? Too small, too big? No one's complaining? Usually there's someone complaining. I'm going to choose the first item here, bash. That's a regular shell that I'm opening, and then I can type regular shell commands. Come on, thank you. Then I can type regular shell commands and execute them. For example, I can ask on which machine I am, that is host name, masternode 001. I can look for the current directory in which I'm located, pwd, home ishnetter. You should be in a different directory. And
Do you just press run, or is it actually?
You press shift return at the end.
Return, okay.
And yeah, so this is a Jupyter Hub notebook. It's the same thing that would be used for Python as well. And I think Jupyter is a combination of Ju for Julia, Pi for Python, and what's the other one? R, I think, for R, the statistics language R. So these three languages got together and decided to create a common user interface. And right now, everybody's using it. So let's hope that I get this correct. Dustin, can you help me out? I run Julia and add iJulia. Is that what I'm doing? Mm.
Yes.
OK. So module load Julia, that makes Julia available from the command line. No!
Actually, can you try instead of go back to the previous tab?
Yep.
Instead of the batch notebook under new.
Okay.
You go right down to the bottom of the terminal. I think that works better.
Okay. Oof, wow. Fancy. Okay. First I type CD, then I'm in my home directory. Module load Julia. Yeah. No.
Why?
Does not work. Okay. Anyway, we can do that. CM local apps Julia. Oh, I said apps local. Can you find out?
CM shared.
I don't know why.
Probably that's why we need to identify
Julia. Julia 1.2. Bin Julia. Very sorry about that. That's the one thing I didn't try ahead of time. So this is what you have to type. Yeah, this is a bad omen for the tutorial. I'm sorry about that.
Work.
And then Julia starts. OK, you don't see that, because this is something I have special in my account. So after you type this long command here, cm shared apps Julia, Julia 1.0, bin Julia. After that, let's make that smaller.
If you want to, run Python here instead of Julia, would it be just do the Python thing, or is that a different?
Yeah, yeah. But this is something you're doing only once in the beginning to set up your account. Later on, this won't be necessary. So,
yeah.
And then you type add iJulia, and shift enter, and then let's hope that works.
Except I don't think you're talking to Julia right now.
What happened? That doesn't work.
Okay.
Sorry,
yeah.
Go to this kind of window instead of staying in standard line.
So are we in the white window or black window?
Okay, sorry, I needed, yeah. So this is, you're seeing live action here. So you are in the black window, that you get the black window by going to this page
okay,
and new and terminal.
Good.
And in the black window, you type this command here to start Julia. Hope you can see that. Maybe make it a bit larger. And then once you started it, you type a closing square bracket that won't appear on the screen. Instead, the prompt turns blue and it's xpkg, and then you type add I Julia.
So that it didn't work, it doesn't work on the white window?
No, it didn't work on the white window because the white bash window doesn't allow you to start Julia. And I see certain output here. I already have iJulia installed, so it's just updating part of it. You should see a different output here. Okay. Yes. Don't forget to hit the closing square bracket before you type add iJulia. Closing. Yes. They're using it because you usually will not hit the closing square bracket as first character. So use it to switch it over to package manager mode. Mm. Thank you. Dustin, you say that was the only thing that's necessary? Okay. So with fingers crossed, you know, done with this. We go back to the first page and now say new Julia 1.0. And that should now be a much easier way to start Julia. You see a message flashing in the top right, kernel starting, please wait. It takes a few seconds to start Julia. Kernel ready for me. I'm going to type version info. If I could type. And then you see that I'm running Julia version 1.2 and a bit of other information. Does this work for all of you?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do the next test. 2 + 3. Yeah, that's the most complicated way to calculate 2 + 3. It took us so far 24 minutes since the beginning of the lecture.
Yes, a bit slow.
Okay, does this work for all of you? Are you all in the Julia interpreter like that? Nobody says anything? Okay, I assume it works. Okay, so if you know Python or Mathematica, then this looks very familiar for you. You can, of course, add numbers. You can calculate square roots. And the syntax is more like the MATLAB syntax than the Mathematica syntax. The keywords are in lowercase, and function calls use a round parenthesis. Square root of 2 is, of course, this. And then you have characters in single quotes. You have strings, hello, in double quotes. Then you have arrays, for example, 1, 2, 3 is an array. Or Mathematica would call it a list, which is a three-element array of integers.
Sorry, why do you want to use characters and, I guess,
copy? I don't know. If you print something or something, then you do that.
It helps, because I'm adding the iJulia still, and no one
okay. Error. Okay, Dustin, can you help him? Mm. Okay, and in Julia, every object has a particular type. And there's a function type of that you can call to find out the type. For example, type of 2 is integer, type of 2.0 is a floating point number, and type of 1, 2, 3 is an array of integers. It's a one-dimensional array. Julia also has support for multi-dimensional arrays. Of course, in Julia, you can define functions. For example, let's write function f of x. And what should we do? Let's check whether x is negative. If x less than 0, then we output an error message. Print line, oops. Else, what should we do? Return 2x plus 1. End, this is the end for the if, and end, this is the end for the function. And then, of course, then we call function f. We can call function f with an integer. Then we get an integer result, and we call it with a floating point number, and we get a floating point result. And we can call it with a complex number. That's just 1 times the imaginary unit. Then we get, oh, that doesn't work. Of course, yes, you can't compare floating point numbers for less than. Let me remove that again. That was quite embarrassing. Let's keep it there.
That's an imaginary thing.
M is the imaginary unit. They don't want to use I because that's a letter use of variables, I, J, K. And there's also, yes?
Did it work?
No, this doesn't work because I have if x is less than 0. I can change the function, right? If absolute value of x is less than 1, that should work, I hope.
Okay.
Yeah, then it works. And then it has complex arithmetic, of course. Yes?
Single quotation and the double quotation are different here.
Yes, they're different. A single quote is just for a single character, and a double quote is for a string, which has multiple characters. Of course, you can have a string that has a single character as well, if you want to do that. And let's also do something with a loop. For example, let's write a loop to do something with an array. Let's write a function to create an array. It's called the array A. There's a function zeros that you can call that gives you an array that is filled with zeros. Zeros 10 gives you 10 zeros. Actually, floating point number zeros for I in 1 to 10, a of I equals 2i plus 1, and in the end we return the array A, and then we get an array of floating point numbers.
So do you need that time, like 2 times I, or you just 2i is would do it? Or?
Ah, it's a good question. I think 2i should work as well in Julia. Okay, yeah. So you can write 2i instead of 2 times I, but only if it's a constant. If it's 2 variables, you can't write x, y. That would not be x times y.
Yeah.
Because that would be, I mean, it's just what people want, and you also need to prevent people from accidentally make errors.
All right.
So let's do a bit of, yes, go ahead.
How do you say the step here?
The step? What do you mean by step? You want to go in steps of 2 or something?
Yeah, let's say.
Okay. I have no idea. Let's try adding a 2 at the end and see what happens. No, that didn't work. Then let's put the 2 here. Yeah, that works. So there are many different languages that they all choose something, and in the end, you're going to look it up in the documentation. Yes?
At
1. Indexing starts at 1. Yes. Biggest mistake that Julia ever made. It should have started at. Okay. Now, MATLAB starts at 1, Fortran starts at 1, and I think Mathematica starts at 1, but other languages start at 0. So in Julia, it's actually 1 where it starts.
The zeros. Zero.
Okay. There is also, so, yes?
How do you put comments on the call?
With hash.
You don't need
the hash itself.
Yes. And since this is a JupyterHub notebook, you can also, what is it? Cell? View? Insert?
Document.
I want to turn it into a markdown thing. What is it? Do you know? I just press escape. What is it?
M.
Escape M, and then it's a markdown cell.
What's happening?
Markdown allows you to write comments. So then it's like a title thing in Mathematica. And then in the end, this will not be executed by Julia, but rather it allows you to write sections, so to say.
Insert something, insert cell above.
So you go to the cell and you type escape M, and that turns it into a markdown cell. And then if you had the hashes in markdown, make a title. So 1 hash is the title of the document, and 2 hashes a section, and 3 hashes a subsection, and so on. And there's also another way to do that. Is it edit?
It's under the cell menu.
Oh, cell type, right. You can change the cell type to code and markdown on some raw thing that I'm not interested in. It gives you the.
Is your way of doing it in terminal then?
Pardon?
In terminal? You're just in Julia and not on Julia.
You want to run a terminal command?
Well, no, I'm running, I'm going straight from Julia.
Yes. In straight Julia, these markdown things do not exist.
Okay, yeah.
Because you're seeing only the kernel, you're only seeing the other types. Yeah. Okay. But I'm going to say something else about terminal. If in a Julia you start something with that semicolon, so if you type semicolon in the actual Julia shell, the prompt will change color, and then you can type a terminal command, for example, host name, and then it will the actual host name. So you can quickly run something, for example, if you want to git add, git commit something. And you can do the closing square bracket, you know that already. That's the package manager that shows you what packages are installed. And status, for example, shows you all the packages that are installed. Yeah, I have a few installed. You probably only have iJulia installed. Yes?
How can I show the line number as you, I mean, the left?
Here?
Long-term.
Are you using iJulia?
No. I mean, it's a code. The code block.
In the code block. Here, these ones.
That.
You don't see them?
I don't see that.
Okay. It probably took me 5 hours to figure that out on Google. I completely forgot what I did. It must be one of the...
It's just go to view and the top align numbers.
Is it? Oh, so easy. Thank you.
It's a toggle line number.
Yes, okay. What I probably did was change my JupyterHub configuration. There's a file.jupyterhub.config or something where you can make these changes. And I made a few other changes as well. If you're interested, I can send you that later. Yes?
If I do the close bracket thing and I go to the packages thing, it changes blue.
Yes.
You
are the left of the line and you hit delete, then it deletes that invisible character that you typed and you go back.
Yeah,
okay. And finally, there's a question mark. That's probably I should have shown that first. You can get help about various things. For example, question mark about what would be a good command. I don't know. Print line that gives you output about all the print line functions that exist there. Yes?
You're writing loops and stuff. Does the number of white space between each line matter?
No, white space does not matter. And if you have a semicolon, you can also put things onto the same line. For example, we can write a loop in one line for I in 1, 2, 3, semicolon, print line, I, semicolon, end. Then we write it in one line.
Is there an equivalent of the double question mark in Python to pull up the source code of something?
To do, what does it do? I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
Like to pull out the source code. Like if you want to look at the source code of print line or like of some package.
Ooh, no, that does not exist. So if you want to look at print line, now you probably have to go in the respective directory. Nice. Good feature. No, doesn't work. Okay. There's a thing called the list comprehension, where you write an expression inside the list. You can write a for loop to create an array. For example, 2i plus 1 for I in 10 to 20 gives you an array with 11 elements. That's a nice way to create an array. And you can also create a 2D matrix in a rather simple way, so a 1D vector. Well, okay, let's just solve a linear system, right? Why not? A equals 1, 2, 3, 4. B equals 5, 6. And then x equals a / b solves the system. So this syntax here is the regular array syntax. We're creating an array with 2 elements, 5 and 6. This syntax here gives us a matrix. I don't know. What is it, 1 and 2? Yes, 1 and 2 are the first row, 3 and 4 are the second row. And this A divided by, it's kind of the reverse division. So it's kind of something like B divided by A, but A is a matrix, so it actually solves the linear system. And then the result is X, put it in here. And then we can also calculate the residual, R equals A times B minus X. What is it? No, AX minus B. And the residual here is, of course, 0. The residual is just the error that you make when you solve a particular system. Because of approximation errors or floating point error, the error might not be 0. does this work for all of you?
Sorry, what's A?
So A is a matrix that I'm defining here. It's a 2x2 matrix.
Yep, you're dividing.
And then B is a vector. And then this is the syntax for solving a linear system. It's called linsolve. And what I've said with dividing, it's kind of intuitively, it's kind of B divided by the matrix A.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to, yeah, you have what down here? AX minus B, if you divide by A, formally you get X equals something. So formally it's something like that. It's not a division, of course, but it solves the system. And of course, the interesting thing about Julia is that we can also do this with much larger matrices. Let's do a random matrix, 1,000 by 1,000. Sorry. B equals random 1,000. X equals solve it. I'm not going to output X because I don't want to have 1,000 numbers on my screen. So I'm adding a semicolon at the end that prevents the output. And yeah, it's already done. Split second here.
Sorry, when
is it random? Random gives a random number. And if you give it arguments, you get a matrix. So this is 1,000 by 1,000 matrix.
So random number which is uniformly between 0 and 1.
Exactly. And there are other random numbers. You can have a normal distribution and so on as well. But this is a uniform distribution, and then it gives you double position floating point numbers.
How do you check like the 10th entry of X?
The 10th entry? Okay, let's do that. Yes. That uses the square brackets. It's just square brackets. And for an A, of course, it A is similar. You use two elements in there. Yes?
How would I view like some 10th entry along a different axis?
What do you mean along a different axis?
So
you want to extract a column or a row from A?
So it's like I want to look at a certain row or a certain column from A.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. But let me just repeat that with a smaller thing so that we can actually output something. So I can say A of colon, comma 10, that gives the 10th row. And I can say 10, comma colon, that gives the 10th column, and I can say A 3, 5 to 7, that gives the respective sequence of three elements there.
You can tell it's written by mathematicians and not computer scientists because of the way that starting from one and ending, like including the ending number.
Oh yes, that's another mistake, yes. And you can also change it, right? You can say A 1, 1 equals 10,000, and then you modified the element of A. Yes?
Yeah, there's Boolean slicing like numerical Python.
Pardon, Boolean slicing?
Yeah. I want to output this array for like, so you can do A square, A larger than zero.
Oof, A larger than zero.
I mean, I just.
That might be it. Well, let's make it 0.9. Yeah, that's what you do.
Why did I have done?
So this is a bit advanced. So if you write a dot in front of an operator, then the operator is applied element-wise to a vector, or to a collection, to a vector or a matrix. If you just write A larger 0.9, that there's a method error because you can't do that. You can't compare a matrix and a number. But with a, that's.
Can you explain what is that doing there?
Just a second. If I write A, just only this expression, then for each element, it runs this calculation, checking whether it's larger or smaller than 0.9. So then you get an array that has lots of zeros and ones. Actually true and false, but for an array, it uses an efficient experimentation bit array. So this probably just needs 10 bytes in memory or 20 bytes or something. And then if you use as an indexing expression in an array another array, then it just gives you those elements for which the other array is true, kind of a filter something. You filter those out for which this is true. But if you do that, of course, you get only those elements which are one, not the ones that are zero. So you completely lose the shape of the array. So this is a two-dimensional array. And here, the result here is just the one-dimensional array containing all the 12 ones. So if you count up here, there should be 12 ones. I'm not going to do that.
So.
Oh, look, when you see the 1,000 here, because I changed the first element of the array.
When I do what you have on 8 dot greater than 0.9, instead of 1 and 0, it gives me 4 and 2.
What does it give you?
So in the output of 53, I have 4 and 2 instead of 1 and 0.
Also true. Now that's interesting.
Cool. What version of Julia are you using? Is it a different version? Oh, okay. I am using version Julia 1.2.0. You're using 1.0.2.
Oh.
You're using an older version of Julia, and apparently they changed it. It's fine. It'll work just fine. It's just the output looks different. So if you actually have Booleans, false and true, and you use it in algebra, for example, true plus two, then it just calculates 1 plus 1. So the result is the same. It's just, maybe they just changed it because ones and zeros are more compact than true and false. Huh? Okay. Okay, let's go back to...
So what was this dot thing you said? It makes it an operator, you said? Or?
So if you do any calculation, for example, if you have arrays or matrices, operators, then you can do pointwise operations. Let's say x equals 1, 2, 3, and y equals 4, 5, 6. Then if you add them, x plus y, then that's clear what is meant. But if you multiply them, x times y, there are many different ways of multiplying them. And the default way that Julia chooses here is the dot product, I hope. No, it doesn't do anything. Yes, it doesn't do anything because it's ambiguous. You can do a pointwise multiplication, and if you add dot in front of some operator, any operator, add, multiply, compare, then it's doing it pointwise. So it's calculating 1 times 4 is 4, 2 times 5 is 10, and 3 times 6 is 18. And you can also calculate x is larger than y. That should be always false. And you can x, of course, divided by y, and so on and so forth. And for a dot product, that's probably a dot operation. What's the dot product? Pardon?
Using linear algebra.
So there's a linear algebra package. It's built in, so we can just use it. And you say, then we have a dot command. Very good. Okay.
Apparently, you can also do transpose of x star y.
Ah, nice. Yeah, so if you calculate a transpose, then you see that the original x was written as column vector, because vectors are column vectors. If you transpose it, it calculates that it outputs it as a row vector. And then you can calculate x dot times y, for example.
The dot didn't work for me. What's going on?
You have to type using linear algebra to get that package. And then you write dot. And actually, changing a vector from a row vector to from a column vector to a row vector, which is what the transpose does, is very fast. It doesn't actually create a new object or do anything. It is just remembered in the type of the object. So the original object x here, if I type type of x, it's an array of integers and a type of x transpose is the adjoint of an array of integers, which means just in the type, it remembers that the thing has to be transposed. And that means transposing costs no time. If you store data in a computer, it's actually quite expensive to access data. If you have a large matrix, then it's about 100 times as expensive to access one element of the matrix than to perform a calculation on that element. That's quite unfortunate that CPUs are much faster than memory these days. And this is why it's important when you transpose a matrix that you don't actually do the transposition, rather you just remember that you use a different indexing scheme next time you access an element. And that's a quite convenient built-in in Julia. Yes?
If you have a multidimensional array and you transpose it by default, which axis does it take?
So for vectors, that's clear. For operators, that's also, you want to have a 3x3. Okay. Oof. Okay. Zeros, 1, 2, 3. let's call this Z. And then look at Z transpose. Ha! Okay, it chickens out again. It doesn't want to do anything. So there's probably another call, transpose, or whatever it is called, and there you explicitly specify which axis should be transposed. But it doesn't do that. So of course, obvious choices would be rotate everything, permute everything, or just do the first two or the last two or something. Okay.
So how would it be like, so if you have a three-dimensional array, and then you want to switch like the first and second index, how would you do it?
I start with a question mark.
Suggest permute steps.
Permute.
Transpose. It's not. Sorry.
Just permute dims, right? Okay. For higher dimensions. Okay, get that permute dims with it.
Yes. Okay. So the reshape function, I should explain it. Let me try just take this for long documentation. So this is what the type. If you type vector 1,8, 1:8. A vector is a one-dimensional array. You get the one-dimensional array. You can reshape things, and reshaping keeps the elements in the same order, but changes the dimensions. For example, you can turn a 3D array and a 1D array that way. But the elements stay in the same order. So you still have the elements 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, except now it's a 2 by 2 by 2 array. And then you can permute the dimensions of this operator A. I'm looking back up here now to the examples. Yeah, here, for example, if you do 3, 2, 1 instead of 1, 2, 3, then the dimensions are exchanged.
So how did you get these examples?
So I type question mark, and then permute dims. And of course, I should probably also, if you're actually interested in Julia, then there's pretty good documentation for the language. And I recommend going through that. There's a manual, Getting Started, and so on, that explains all the details. Getting Started is what we're doing here. Variables, elementary operations, blah, 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 functions, control flow. We mentioned many of these. This gets fancy down here, networking streams, parallel computing, calling C, calling Python is not in here. Okay. And where is linear algebra? It's not here. Must be one of the later chapters here. Base. Oof, that is longer than I thought. Anyway, there's also a good introduction to linear algebra down here. So Julia knows infinity. If you calculate 1 over 0, the result is infinity. And the linear algebra package also has a norm that you can calculate. And apparently the vector norm of the matrix A that we had up there is 8. I don't know why it is 8, probably because one of the elements is 1,000. Oh no, we just redefined A. There you go. The infinity norm of A is 8 because this is actually A. Of course, the largest one is 8. You can calculate the 1 norm, the 2 norm, and so on. Okay, I was thinking about discussing how to program, how to use types in Python, because types in Python are different from, sorry, types, Julia. Types in Julia are different from types in Python, but given the current time, I don't think it's wise to do that. I can do a bit of plotting, and I can maybe also show how to call Python some Python routines from Julia. Yes?
Why would we be using Julia?
Julia is more convenient if you're using linear algebra. What I just typed in Julia has a nicer syntax than in Python. And if you write explicit for loops in Julia, the code is typically much faster, 10 times faster, than it is explicitly in Python. In Python, if you do linear algebra, you basically have to use NumPy. And that is just about 10 times slower than Julia. But if you're not using linear algebra, if you're doing some generic programming, web programming, sockets, visualization, and so on, then Python is an equally valid choice. And we're going to give a Python tutorial on, do you remember the date? A month from now.
3 weeks?
Yes, yes. Okay, if you want to call Python, there's a package called PyCall that you can install. So, I'm just adding a separator here. So, add PyCall, then installs the PyCall package.
So while we're waiting, another reason that people like Julia is that it can do like type specializations, right? Like you can write your function once and it can make fast code versions for.
Oh yes, yes, I definitely want to show that. Yes, yes.
Numbers or integers or whatever.
Okay.
Like it kind of can automatically deal with types in a smart way.
Yeah. So there's, for example, pi, which you know has whatever, so many digits, whatever, pi over 2, does that work? Oh, I hope I'm not. Yes. But you can also write big pi, and big uses big floats, which are arbitrary position, and then you get, by default, 80 digits, and 80 is just a system constant. If you want 800 or 1,000 digits, you can do that as well. That's quite convenient. That's the same feature, of course, that Mathematica has. It also works for integers. 10 to the 10, you know that, that is that. 10 to the 20 looks a bit funny because there's an integer overflow. But if you use arbitrary precision integers, big integers, then it's correct. And if you want 2,000 digits, there you go.
How did you get 2,000?
Oh, I just calculate 10 to the 2,000. For integers, it does arbitrary things. But for floating point, you need to call a function to change the precision for big float. And the advantage is that many linear algebra routines in Julia are written in such a way that they work for any type, not just for double precision. So if you want to invert a matrix and you need 1,200 digits, and I've talked to Pedro a few weeks ago, he actually likes that, it's there, it's built in, it works right away. And that's a convenient thing to have.
Well, when you put big and then it goes to them, what's the precision?
Oh, these are integers here, so 10 to 2,000. So this is just as beside as it gets. Oh, rational numbers. Did I tell you about rational numbers? Is it a double, or what is it? This one? Yes, it must be this one, yes. So Julia has rational numbers, of course, and it gets a bit slow if they're large, obviously. But then you get many of the same features that Mathematica has also, because, you know, rational numbers work just fine there, and so on and so forth. And
So does like Julia do stuff at Mathematica? Does like take derivatives of functions and integrals?
In principle, yes. So the kernel inside is built in Lisp, same as Mathematica. So it has all the features that are necessary for that. But the user interface and the packages that exist, they are more targeted for numerical computing. So in principle, it's possible, but you won't find a nice user interface. We could just call D of something. Although, with the advent of machine learning, everybody's interested in automatically calculating the derivative of something. So a big neural network is essentially a function that calculates something. And if you want to optimize a function, you need to take the derivative with respect to the input, with respect to the parameters, or a variation, as physicists call it. And if you can do that automatically, that's quite convenient. So there are Julia packages that do that in various ways. And Julia has communities. The communities for plotting, for linear algebra, and so on. And there's also a community for automatic differentiation. I think, is it called Julia Diff or something? Yeah. Stop approximating derivatives, and so on. There's forward diff, reverse diff, I don't know. They have their own weird technology. It's just product rule under the hood.
So they're not approximating derivatives?
Well, if you'd use finite differences, then you approximate derivatives. You calculate it here and here, and you do that. But if you could actually look at, when you write a function, you write 2x plus 1. So if you look at the source code, you can do it. Yes, you can do that. And that works for all functions, even if there's a for loop or an if statement in there, you can calculate derivatives still analytically. And Julia can do that.
So are you going to tell us this Python thing?
Yes. Oof.
I'm
a bit... do you have an example for Python, something calling Python?
You could do plotting as well, I guess, if that's.
Yeah, sure. So there are several plotting packages. The one that I used to like the most is essentially matplotlib from Python, just wrapped. There's another one called gadfly that I now like better, so I was going to show you that. But maybe I should show you the other one, that matplotlib one. What is it? Is it plots? What's it called?
Plots.
Try plots. Yeah, and of course, now I'm typed using pycall and add gadfly and add plots, and in the background, it's loading and installing all these packages. That's going to take a bit. So Julia, I advertised it as being as fast as Fortran. It has one big problem currently, and that is called time to first plot. Because it compiles all the routines before they call it, the first time you call a routine is much slower than Python, because it has to compile the routine. So when you load a plotting package and do the first plot, that is much slower than in Python. Now the next 100 plots will be faster. But in a tutorial, it's mostly the first plot. And this is just a problem that Julia has. I mean, they're working on that, but it's version 1.3 now. Maybe they have fixed it in a year or in 2 years from now. But if you want to do something interactive, you also notice that in the beginning, but it starts up, it takes a few seconds and so on, it's going to be like that.
So next time if you want to run this, should we do all of these again? I guess the app.
You only do things in this notebook. Everything that you did in the funny black screen won't be necessary anymore.
Yeah.
But this one here.
The notebooks, we have to do it again, I guess.
Yeah. Let's try to plot something. X goes to sine x minus 1 plus 1. Is that the plot syntax?
Should we do add plots or using plots?
So add plots installs it. You have to do it only once. If you do it a second time, it will just do nothing. And using plots, you have to do every time. That kind of makes the package available to the current Julia session. And this pre-compiling plots is what takes a bit of time. Sorry about that. The other commands here, yeah. So add plots is the important one. The other ones are, ignore that. That's why I did the gadfly thing. Yeah, gadfly apparently installed a few other packages as well. This is amazing. Yes. Okay. Now, I said the tutorial would be from 1 to 2. So I think that's by now the official end of the tutorial. I plan to hang around here for half an hour in case you have a problem or anything, have questions, or want to know something else. We can just continue to do that. But I don't want to take up too much of your time if you need to be elsewhere. Yes?
How do I type in big 2 divided by 3? And it seems to lose precision.
If you type big of 2 divided by 3, then it divides 2 by 3 with low precision and then makes it big. So what you can do is big of 2 divided by 3.
Okay.
And then you should see, 80 digits. Yes?
So can I just cover the iJulia script to a working script if I want to submit the job?
I don't know of any automatic tools, but in principle, you can copy the content of all these lines here into the script. And wherever you use the semicolon in the beginning or a closing square bracket or something, that will not work in a script. So there's no good way.
I think also if you go under File, there's a Download As, and one of the options is Julia.dl. And I'm not sure if it might give you like this. Will probably give you like basically all the
contents of the cells. Okay, file. Where is it? Download as.
Download as.
Okay. 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 So that's a plot, and that called I think matplotlib in the background. So it actually called the Python code. And so it installed Python packages in the background, and it can use Anaconda in the background to install Python packages and so on and so forth.
So you mentioned if I type a semicolon, I can have bash commands, sorry, shell commands. How can I, like, for example, save the output of those commands to some variables that have in my code?
The output of a Julia command or a shell command?
Shell command.
Okay. So that For that, I would use something like pipes or processes in Julia. And that's a bit of an advanced topic. I just want to briefly mention it. If you use backtick, for example, backtick ls is a command. That's the shell command. If you call it, it doesn't do anything because you need to run it. And if you run it, then you see the output. And you can ask what the type of the output is. It's a process, okay, yeah. So you know you have to look at the documentation of run to see how to actually get the output. There might be commands like pipe or open where you can walk step to the output step by step, similar to Perl. And you could probably also create an I/O buffer and then have the output go into the I/O buffer that corresponds to a string stream in C++ or so. Okay. Further questions?
So how come your thing runs faster than our thing?
We're running on the same computer. I have no idea. I type faster. No, I have no idea.
It looks like yours. Okay, maybe because you type fast.
Okay. Yeah. So next week's tutorial will be on, Dustin, on what?
Rakovchi in Monte Carlo. Mm.
And we are going to use Julia. Dustin is going to do that. So Dustin intends doing Julia as well. So if you have other questions in the meantime, feel free to send an email to Dustin or to me regarding Julia.
It's the first and only thing I've ever written in Julia, so.
So it will be MCMC with Julia?
Yes, that's right. And I think my intent is to reproduce the result that won the 1999 Nobel Prize in Physics. But a little better.
More than $1 million.
Okay.
When will be the Einstein talking?
Pardon?
When will be the tutorial Einstein talking?
October 15. I have a colleague, Steve Brand. He wants to visit during that week. And since he's visiting anyway, I twisted his arm to give a tutorial on the Einstein toolkit. And the Einstein toolkit is not written in Julia. That's going to be C, Fortran. It's hardcore HPC programming.
So is your Julia MCMC faster than your Python MCMC?
That is a good question. I haven't tested it.
Okay. If you're interested in speed, then the Julia documentation has a section on profiling that shows you which part of the code are slow and which one are fast, and gives you a few tips about things that you might not initially see, things that are slower, and then there could be easy alternatives that are much faster, where you don't see something. Okay, thank you for coming here. That's quite a turnout. Thank you.
Thank you.